and welcome to a special episode of Contending at the Water Cooler. I'm your host, Joey Moser, and I'm very excited to have the incredible Rebecca Hall for this week's podcast interview. Rebecca Hall stars as Linda Rosencrantz alongside Ben Whishaw's Peter Hujar in Ira Sachs' latest film, Peter Hujar's Day. The two-person drama recently received 5 Independent Spirit nominations, including Best Feature, and both Hall and Whishaw were honored with nominations for their performances. In our conversation, Hall and I discuss active listening, Linda's physicality, what she loves about 1970s New York, and whether she would like to meet Joan Crawford or Betty Davis, like her character says in the film. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you like what you hear, and enjoy our conversation. I love how you transmit a lot of intelligence no matter what character you're playing. And I am always just like leaning in, wondering like, what is she thinking? Every single character, which for me is very exciting. So thank you so much for the time. Congratulations on the nomination, which is really exciting.
Thank you. I'm very happy about it.
Yeah. I watched this movie with a couple of friends, and my one friend who admittedly is like, I don't watch movies, which I don't know how we're friends.
That's strange.
Yeah, it is strange. I was like, what do you do with all of your time? He was the most of like the four, excluding myself, he was the one who was like the most engaged, which I was very satisfied by that. We talked a lot about the movie afterwards. What's that?
That is satisfying.
Yeah, it's very.
I had this experience at Sundance when we first premiered it. There was this group of like young kids. I sound condescending, but I want to say they were like 19, 20, something like that, possibly younger. And they came up to me afterwards and just with this look of truly like their minds had been blown. They were like, I just can't believe this film. It's just unlike anything we've ever seen. And it's just it feels so revolutionary, one of them said. And I was like, oh yeah, because like people just sitting still in a space in a movie and talking to each other is quite refreshing, I guess, if you're 19 or 20. I mean, how many movies have you seen that are like that?
I mean, I think that, I don't know, it kind of reminded me of like, it's like, have we forgotten like how to just listen to each other?
Yeah.
Talk and converse and like you know, obviously because it's period, there's less distractions, things right. like that. And it's just something that I love about your performance is that you're obviously listening for work, as you know, for her job, but she's also friends with Peter. She's I don't know. I was curious. I was going to ask sort of like being a friend and listening to them versus like doing something to, you know, express themselves. Is there a difference there, do you think? Or do you think maybe that Linda approached talking to her friend in a, I don't want to say a guarded way, but it's sort of like there's a professional element to what she is doing, but also she's just, you know, chatting with him. So I guess I didn't know if you can say anything about that.
I think both things can exist at the same time. I mean, she was a very close friend. So I felt when I talked to Linda that kind of the warmth and the love that she has for Peter still in her recollections and her memories of him. But, you know, also when I talked to Linda, I was super aware when I was just talking to her on the phone, the first time I met her was on the phone, that she was aware of her place in the conversation, if you see what I said. Like it wasn't listening that negates the self. She was very much like listening in a way that deflects from attention on her, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like it's active and it's sort of, there's a little kind of, there's what can I say that's going to bring out the most in the person I'm talking to, but also keep them talking.
Yeah. And it's
I think you are quite familiar with doing interviews. It's not self-conscious exactly, but there is something, you're aware of your role in what you're doing. You're not just passively sitting there.
Yeah, and even there are moments like, I love the moment, I don't think you're even looking at him at this point. You're in the kitchen and he tries to, he stops himself and he was like, I think he's asking about the length of tape that is left. And then he says, is this boring? And you just quite simply, I think your eyes are a little bit down. And you say, no, it's not boring to me. And it's just sort of like an exchange like that made me think of like, you know, she's being genuine and answering his question, but also at the same time, she's also like nudging the conversation. She's like, keep going, just go. This is what I want. Just keep going.
Yeah. It's receptive. It's like, you know, it's all those, but it's supportive, I guess.
That's a good word for it. Yeah.
Supportive listening.
Supportive listening. We could all do some more supportive listening.
We all could do some more supportive.
Yeah, in our lives and in the things we watch, of course. I'm a giant voice and speech nerd. I'm really interested in physicality. I was curious if you can tell me a little bit about like the placement of your voice, but also the second time that I watched the movie. I love how Ben as Peter is just like, you know, he lays however he wants and he's, you know, sort of like, I was watching it again and my cat just happened to be like lounging in the room. And when he's laying back on the couch, my cat was like spread on the floor. Sort of in the same way. And then like later, when you guys are sitting on the bed together, I like that you're sitting up against the wall. And he's just sort of lounging. And I guess I wanted to know how you wanted to, I know obviously voice is different than physicality, but I guess I wanted to know how you kind of like meld it all together almost.
That's a good question. Yeah. I mean, the voice was specific to her. And that came from listening to her and finding something that felt, I think it's like with any kind of accent work for me, especially if you're modeling it on a real person, which often you are, even if it's not a person that you're playing, but you're modeling it on some sort of voice.
Yeah.
There's a sort of like hybridization that goes on between imitation and finding something that sits comfortably in your body, because your body is different to that person, like your voice box and all that kind of thing. So you can't literally mimic it, even if you would want to, you know, but you've got to find something that feels innate. And I can't really explain to you what that process is for me. I don't really work with dialect coaches because I've always done this and it's something that I've always enjoyed doing. And I don't know, it's a sort of musing on the voice. It's a sort of living with it. It's a sort of listening to it in my ear. It's you know, walking around talking like that until it sort of drops into my body in a different way. And, you know, it's my own weird process that it changes and shifts according to my mood and my fancy on any given day. But the physicality, honestly, I think the physicality might be something similar. For me, there's like every character that I've ever played, it's always felt that there's only one way for me to play it. And it's sort of like I'm searching for that.
Yeah.
It's almost like it already exists and I'm go on a sort of adventure of looking for it until it suddenly is there. And I honestly, that sounds so sort of woo-woo, but it is actually quite woo-woo if I'm being honest. I don't prescribe to rigid systems particularly. It sort of either happens or it doesn't.
I mean, a film like this with such ease of conversation, I feel like feeling it. You just telling me I just had to feel it and do it, that's fine with me, because it's, I don't know,
It's intimacy, right? And there's something about that, you know, I wouldn't have necessarily, I don't think Ben or I would have known what to do until we were in that space with that particular lighting, with the particular soft furnishings around us, and also the sort of particular nature of what happened between me and Ben as people. You know, we became very close friends on that job. That was also part of that process, that we sort of fast-tracked a friendship.
Yeah.
You know, by kind of lounging around together in this very thing.
That's a dream. I said to somebody when the movie was over, they're like, how was the movie? And I said, two things. I've said, if Ben Whishaw talked to me this much, I would die on the spot. Number two, if Rebecca Hall listened to me this much, I would die on the spot. And they were like, that's a great review. I was like, perfect.
That is a great review. I love that review.
Yeah. I'll try to get them to put on a poster. I'll nag them. That's what I'll do. I wanted to ask the research, but I mean, like, I find myself always, depending on what I'm watching, whether it's like Mrs. Maisel, 1950s, 60s New York, this 1970s New York, I want to like race and grab like a plane ticket and come to New York, even though that is not obviously the same. I guess I wanted to know maybe if you could tell me anything that you would appreciate about this particular time period in this particular place, if anything.
Oh, a lot. I think a lot of my sort of my early understanding of New York comes from that time period. It comes from the films that come out of that time period. There was such a boom of New York filmmakers, whether it's, you know, the obvious ones, the Scorsese, the Woody Allen, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also just so many, many cultural touch points from that era. And then there's, you know, then you drift into the art and the poetry and the Patti Smiths and the, you know, it's just like it's in our psyches a little bit, associating New York with the 70s. Well, for me anyway, I'm speaking broadly, but I think it is there. And I fell in love with New York of that time. When I was a kid, I wanted to grow up and sort of wear sweaters and eat sushi and talk about movies. Like, that was kind of like what I wanted my life to be, and then by some miracle I managed to do it and moved to Manhattan.
I remember last year when that like Timothy Chalamet movie, the Bob Dylan movie, came out last year, and I was like moping around. It was like, my life will never be walking through the snow with a chunky sweater. It'll never be like that ever.
Just, you know, go and spend a holiday in New York, yeah. Get a junkie sweater.
I went to the Village for the first time. Actually, my husband and I went there. It was the week. My birthday's right after Christmas. And so we went to New York to see a bunch of shows. And it was the first time that I went to the Village. And I almost very nerdily just wanted to like twirl around and be like, this was the place. This was it.
You do. I mean, like the painting scene and all that stuff in the Village. I mean, it's all, the problem is it's all sort of sadly quite nostalgic. It doesn't exist like that in the same way.
I know.
There's still flavors of that in New York that are kind of inescapable. And I remember when I went to New York for the first time, I was maybe 19. Not the first time. I'd been going when I was a kid with my mum. My mum sang there a lot. But when I went first as an adult by myself, I was 20 doing As Like It at BAM. And I remember being like, no, this is it. This is where I want to live.
Every time I go there, like, I want to, let's change it. Let's move. Let's do it. And then I'm like, no. Need to let reality smack me in the face. I wanted to ask about the ending, but I mean, I just love how night really creeps in. I love the lighting at the end of it. I love the music that really swells at the end. I guess I wanted to know from Linda's point of view, I don't want to say like, is she worried she didn't ask him anything in particular, but I wanted to ask like maybe what you think her mindset was as their time was obviously coming to an end that day.
I mean, I think I played that last beat outside of time and space kind of deliberately, because it struck me, I'm not even sure that, I think it's something that we all sort of stumbled across as we were making it, that there was like beyond the sort of snapshot of life or the snapshot of biography or the snapshot of New York, there was a sort of larger thing emerging out of this story, which was the sort of ephemera, as it were, or like just the sort of fragile nature of existence, to be grand about it. Because when you get to the end of the movie, you know, outside of the movie, you understand as a viewer that he's going to not make it and he's going to die a few years later from AIDS. You know that that time period in New York is not going to make it. You know that this way of being an artist is not going to make it, but this way of living is not going to make it. And it becomes elegiac without even without ever saying anything remotely close to it. So when you asked me what Linda was thinking, I can't tell you. I'm sure on some level, like, Linda ended the interview, and the interview ended, and they probably, you know, went and had Chinese food, and then you know, carried on the next day on the phone. But the specific ending of that film felt very different to me, and I found myself being very moved in that moment by all of that and by the poetry of what Ira was doing. Because the other layer of this is the ephemera of film, which is the bigger, which is not shying away from, and the film's capacity to capture a brief moment that becomes nostalgic and you can't get back, but you have it captured on film, is something very moving about that. And so whether I wanted to or not, I'm not sure it was a entirely conscious decision. I just started crying when I watched him deliver that last speech. And then Ira was like, I don't know what's going on in your brain, but it's a brilliant choice. And I was like, I don't know either, but it felt really right. It felt really right for, I think, all those reasons. I'm not sure I was aware of it in the moment, though. It was a very instinctive thing. And the lighting, I think, all of the things he said, give it that quality. But we didn't know he was going to play Mozart's Requiem on it.
No, I mean, of course not. You don't have Iris Actions blaring it from the other room. No, not like that. Not at all.
No.
I mean, growing up as a gay man myself, growing up and knowing, anytime I see something like mid to late 70s and know what's going to happen in the 80s in New York, I feel anything, there's like an automatic, like, baked in tension, whether it's integral to the story or not. So I remember when I saw it for the first time, and I will admit that I wasn't as familiar with who Peter Hujar was before I watched the movie. I've done a ton of reading after I saw it, but it was just like,
to be honest, before doing this, I didn't know a great deal either.
Yeah. I think that's something great if you don't know who he is or you don't know who Linda is. Like, it's that kind of doesn't matter while you watch it. And then you have a beautiful jumping off point afterwards. The specifics of the time period have a layer of anticipation and tragedy and all that sort of baked in, you know.
So true. So true. No, it's a particular kind of poignancy. There should be a word for it. The calm before the storm or something.
Yeah.
The not knowing. Yeah. There's like, probably a word in German for it that I don't know.
There's the most beautiful artistic time met with the most tragic.
Yeah.
Ugly, everything.
Yeah.
Just a silly question before I let you go. Would you rather meet Bette Davis or Joan Crawford?
Bette Davis, 100%.
Yeah, okay, me too.
I literally have a tattoo of, well, it's not Bette Davis, but I have a tattoo of the scene in Now Voyager where she comes off the boat with the hat, and there's that incredible silhouette of her in the hat where she just does that with the hat. And so I got a line drawing of the hat, like, on on my side. So yeah, I'm a Bette Davis forever.
No hesitation. I love it. That moment in Now Voyager, I'm a big, like, costumes nerd. I think that was like a root of me being like, look what a hat can do for the story.
Yes,
it was really great.
Truly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for letting me gush at you. I just love the movie so much. I can't wait to watch it again.
I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you very much for your support. Course.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Have a good rest of your day. Thank you.
Good supportive listener.
Bye. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.